and the bells were Long John Baldwin's ideas. I was the organ player in his backing band, Bluesology. John had spotted all the other R&B bands going psychedelic. One week you'd go and see Zoot Money's Big Roll Band playing James Brown songs. The next you'll find they were calling themselves Dantallion's Chariot, wearing white robes on stage and singing about how World War III was going to kill all the flowers. He decided we should follow suit, sartorially at least. So we all got caftans. Cheaper ones for the backing musicians, while John's were specially made at Take Six in Carnaby Street. Or at least he thought they were specially made, until we played a gig and he saw someone in the audience wearing exactly the same caftan as him. He stopped in the middle of a song and started shouting angrily at him. "Where do you get that shirt? That's my shirt!" This, I felt, rather ran contrary to the caftan's association with peace and love and universal brotherhood. I adored Long John Baldry. He was absolutely hilarious, deeply eccentric, outrageously gay and a fabulous musician, maybe the greatest 12-string guitarist the UK had ever produced. He'd been one of the major figures in the British blues boom of the early 60s, playing with Alexis Corner and Cyril Davis and the Rolling Stones. He had an encyclopedic knowledge of the blues, and just being around him was an education. He introduced me to so much music that I'd never heard before. But more than that, he was an incredibly kind, generous man. He had a knack of spotting something in musicians before anyone else could see it, then nurturing them, taking the time to build their confidence. He did it with me, and before that he'd done it with Rod Stewart, who'd been one of the singers in Steam Packet, John's previous band. Rod, John, Julie Driscoll, Brian Auger, they were incredible, but then they split up. The story I heard was that one night after a gig in Saint-Tropez, Rod and Julie had an argument, and Julie threw red wine over Rod's white suit. And I'm sure you can imagine how well that went down. And that was the end of Steam Packet. So Bluesology had got the gig as John's backing band instead, playing hip soul clubs and blues cellars all over the country. It was great fun, even if John had some peculiar ideas about music. We played the most bizarre sets. We'd start out doing really hard-driving blues, Time's Getting Tougher Than Tough, Hoochie Coochie Man, and the audience would be in the palm of our hand. But then John would insist we played The Threshing Machine, a sort of smutty West Country novelty song, the kind of thing rugby players sing when they're pissed, like 'Twas on the Good Ship Venus or Eskimo Nell. John would even sing it in an ooh-ah accent. And after that, he'd want us to perform something from the Great American Songbook, It Was a Very Good Year, or Every Time We Say Goodbye, which enabled him to do his impersonation of Della Reese, the American jazz singer. I don't know where he got the idea that people wanted to hear him playing the Threshing Machine or doing an impersonation of Della Reese, but bless him, he remained absolutely convinced that they did, in the face of some pretty compelling evidence to the contrary. You'd look out at the front row, and people who'd come to hear blues legend Long John Baldry and just see a line of mods, all chewing gum and staring at us in complete horror. What the fuck is this guy doing? It was hilarious, even if I was asking myself the same question. And then catastrophe struck. Long John Baldry had a huge hit single. Obviously, this would usually have been the cause of great rejoicing, but Let the Heartaches Begin was an appalling record, a syrupy, middle-of-the-road, housewife's choice ballad. It was a million miles from the kind of music John should have been making, and it was number one for weeks, never off the radio. I'd say I didn't know what he was thinking, but I knew exactly what he was thinking, and I couldn't really blame him. He'd been slogging around for years, and this was the first time he'd made any money. The blues cellars stopped booking us, and we started playing the supper clubs, which paid better. Often, we'd play two a night. They weren't interested in John's pivotal role in the British blues boom or his mastery of the 12-string guitar. They just wanted to see someone who'd been on television. Occasionally, I got the feeling they weren't that interested in music full stop. In some clubs, if you played over your allotted time, they simply closed the curtains on you, mid-song. On the plus side, at least the supper club audiences enjoyed the Threshing Machine more than the mods did. There's one other major problem with Let the Heartaches Begin. Bluesology couldn't play it live. I don't mean we refused to play it. I mean we literally couldn't play it. The single had an orchestra and a female chorus on it. It sounded like Mantovani. We were an 8-piece rhythm and blues band with a horn section. There was no way we could reproduce the sound. So John came up with the idea of putting the backing track on tape.